It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And we are off and running here at about a minute and a half past the hour. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go should you choose to, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com or HeadOn.live. They are both equally accessible now. Go either place. If you'd like to jump into the chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and well, you will be immediately transported there too, where you will become a part of the rollicking, merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room between the hours of 6 and 9 p.m., 3 and 6 p.m. Pacific time, the hours, in other words, during which this program is live. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. If you jump in, you will be met at the moment by me and Anatole and VT Blom and midweek pinch hit utility chat room moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan, who are awaiting your participation, assuming you can, assuming, you know, your machine can cope with Java and all of that stuff. Yay, thank you very kindly to Sister Carol Baker and Brother Deacon Asa, pointing out that the streams is a-working. Working over at whiterosesociety.org and working at headon.live. That means we're going out all over the place. We're going to TuneIn. We're going to Stitcher. We're going to Roku. We're going to whiterosesociety.org. We're going to headon.live and headonradionetwork.com. Goodness gracious, the stream is ubiquitous. Yes, yes, indeed. And before we get too deeply into the program, I will simply note that this being the 31st day of the month, we don't have any subscribers to thank, because sooner or later, anybody who was on the 31st got rolled into the 30th, and everybody who was on the 30th or the 31st or the 29th next month will get rolled into the 28th. So that's what that the subscribers will see that little bit of a change. And thank you very kindly to all of our subscribers who have gotten us to the end of January in the good and have helped us, courtesy of our buddy Ralph's and her challenge, the Trash Wisconsin Challenge, named for Snot Walker, the governor up there who is trashing Wisconsin. Thank you, Ralph's, and thanks for helping to get us there. It's a mighty big deal. I really do appreciate those challenges for the end of the month. And so, just a note, as we move in toward February, we'll do it the same way. We will tally up the subscriptions, and the last few days of the month will hopefully be fundraising free, as long as we make the fundraising goals throughout the rest of the month. And that's all there is to say about fundraising this evening. Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. Let's see. Of course, by the way, just a little mention of the mini horn-in that I hope we're, you know, it's not a thing. I mean, there's not going to be a brass band or anything, but I'm going to be in New York City at the middle of the month, and like Saturday, the 17th of February, I've set a little time together for our friends in the general New York area to sort of get together and hang out, meet each other. I'll meet you, you'll meet me. It's always fun to meet the people who form the who form this little family community congregation, and we'll just hang out and yak and carry on and that sort of thing. But short of just meeting on a street corner somewhere, if you want to do this, you need to send me an email, okay? And I'll mention this more as we go through, as we get closer. But we need to find a venue, and in order to do that, I need to know how many people there's going to be. So if you are into doing that, send me an email, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com, and we'll tally it up and know what kind of a group we're looking at, and find some sort of watering hole or something somewhere where so that we can all enjoy ourselves. Okay? So please, just send me an email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Put, you know, NYC horn in the subject line, something like that. And I'll try to make mention of it every evening for the next week or so, so that we'll know if this thing's going to come off. And then if it's not, I'll tell you with enough time for you to not make plans. Okay? Okay. So, all right, I've got that taken care of. By the way, I had a note from Lauren up in far Canada, in the province of Alberta. Subject line, slimy supplements. Hi, Bob. I may not be periodontic, but as the self-proclaimed distributor for Horn Nutraceuticals Canada, I can't get enough of slippery supplements. We catarrh-inflicted, often cold and not cachetic, but rarely cannibalistic Canadian researchers here in the Northern Research Center have been trying to come up with a substitute for those scarce sex clams, which are hard to find here on the bald prairie. We like the slobbery, slippery elm, but are working on both phlegmatic fennel and oleaginous okra. Damn hard to grow as it's minus 26 degrees Celsius tonight, with the wind chilled, using up lots of our fabulous Alberta coal-powered electricity. Now, you have to refer to that, Lauren, as beautiful, clean coal, to keep the lights on in the greenhouse. Don't expect any shipments from us. Please send sex clams. I don't know when we're going to have those sex clams again. You know, I had to get down to Alabama for those the last time. They're awfully, awfully difficult to come by. But goodness gracious, they're good, I think. And that does remind me that this evening, of course, I've had, as is the usual case, I've had a visit from the hardworking periodontic, peripatetic scientists at Horn Nutraceuticals, at Horn Labs on Twitter, who brought me a little bottle and said, try these. In the past, that has happened and occasionally led to me watching the walls breathe and the sky melt and things like that. But no. I'm proud to tell you this evening, about something new from the from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. That's right. I'm talking about Modiolar Mollymoochers. Modiolar Mollymoochers, grown in the in only select spots. The hills and hollers of Appalachistan. The mollymoocher is known as a fungus for its restorative properties. Its crenellated surface provides a home for tiny spiders and things like that. And when you're picking them and just eating them out of the wild, you got to be careful of those little bastards. So consequently, a lot of work goes into turning them into a nutritional supplement. Modiolar Mollymoochers are available for only a short time, And being as how they're mushrooms, they've got all kinds of nutritional and mind-bending qualities. You're going to want these, and you're going to want them. You're going to have to act quickly, because Modiolar mollymoochers will not be around long. This is from last year's harvest, and we had to beg, borrow, and steal to come up with them in order to apply our proprietary processes to them so that they could be freeze-dried, ground up, and put into teeny-tiny capsules and then put into bottles. And the cotton that goes into the bottles alone is brutally expensive. That's why a three-month supply of Modiolar mollymoochers will run you every bit of $121.87. $121.87 for a three-month supply, but that three-month supply will also get you a little bundle of test strips so that you can test them at home and know for a fact, be absolutely secure in the knowledge that Modiolar mollymoochers have absolutely no nutritional benefit whatsoever, that in fact, they are just another bullshit nutritional supplement like all the other bullshit nutritional supplements hustled on radio programs all around America, because you can't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness radio program without a bullshit nutritional supplement to hustle. No, you can't. So act now. Supplies are limited. Well, hell, they're not only are they limited, they're imaginary. Operators aren't standing by, and it isn't a free call. So remember, Modiolar mollymoochers, use the code I'm a dumbass at checkout, and we won't give you any discount whatsoever, because after all, you're a simpleton buying nutritional supplements from a radio program. You know, I've never cared much for mollymoochers, but thanks to Modiolar mollymoochers, I'm able to get all I want each and every day. Yes, yes, yes. Modiolar mollymoochers. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks. This side up, FOB, COD, SHROOMS. Modiolar mollymoochers only from Horn Nutraceuticals at Horn Labs on Twitter. Yes, indeed. And of course, it's as we do at the beginning of most every program lately. Well, it's time for This Day in Horn History. For today's edition of This Day in Horn History, we're dialing the Horn 9000 time machine 12 years into the past, all the way back to January 31st, 2006. The program opens with Bob apologizing that he'll be playing W's State of Disunion in the background. Are you ready to watch Democrats applaud the biggest threat to world peace and security as he stammers through the State of the Union? I wish we could see the Democratic caucus stand up and walk out on that murderous bastard, Bob observes. Yeah, do you realize that far back the program had only been on the air for 3 months and change, maybe 4 months? About 4.5 months back then, yeah. Sad news comes in that Coretta Scott King has passed away in her sleep the night before. I don't know where the flame goes when the candle stops burning, but if there's an afterlife, I bet those two are together right about now, Bob says dolefully. Sammy Bad Breath Alito is confirmed earlier on this day, and Bob's absolutely beside himself. With his tongue planted firmly in his cheek, Bob says, 58 senators voted for this misogynistic pig. We know from his opinion in Planned Parenthood versus Casey that he wants women to have to ask permission of their husbands to see to their basic necessities with their own insides. And I look at that as a gift. So while Agnes was out grocery shopping today, I took the opportunity to call the hospital, and later today we're going to get her tubes untied. And if she sues me and we go all the way to the Supreme Court, Sammy Bad Breath Alito is going to be on my side. Guess what, ladies? In Alito world, you don't control your insides. Of course, Agnes, being the Viking warrior princess, doesn't take the snark sitting down. Okay, ladies, it's like this. If he wants to control my insides, I get to rip his out, says Agnes. And you know what? That part wasn't a joke. And that's a brief look at Ghosts of the Horns Past, 4,383 days into antiquity, all the way back to January the 31st, 2006, for This Day in Horn History. My goodness gracious sakes alive! I was just a little bitty baby, 43-year-old. Yeah, just a little bitty baby, 43-year-old, internet talk radio host. My gracious sakes, how the time doth fly! Kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. This day in horn history, I get a big kick out of those. It's fun to look back into just to see where the program has gone and what has transpired, and how much damage has Sammy Bad Breath Alito done since that two-legged monstrosity was allowed onto the court. Well, the short answer is a lot. But we can talk. As it turns out, it may very well be that the damage he's done will largely fade compared to the damage that Anne's boy Neil Gorsuch will wind up doing. Because he's such a wild-eyed, radical white winger. He makes Fat Dead Tony Scalia look downright liberal. Never thought I'd catch myself saying that. So, it is, of course, as I noted, the 31st day of January, 2018. And the little old blue-haired ladies in the Fellowship Hall kitchen pulled out all the stops for me today. It was mighty sweet of them. They knew what it was, and consequently they fixed my very, very favorite, dessert. Had to fix several of them, of course, because the deacons are always involved. But there were several. Homemade apple layer cakes with homemade caramel icing sitting there on the dessert table off to the side of the fellowship hall after you come out of the cafeteria line there in the kitchen. Yeah, they did it. I mean, they did an absolute number. Oh, there was everything I could possibly begin to dream of. They did up a big industrial-sized pan of baked steak with brown gravy and onions and some of the Molly Moochers that we didn't manage to get into capsule form. There was homemade whipped mashed potatoes, mercy sakes, and another of my favorite vegetable dishes, those orange glazed carrots with the sliced almonds worked into them. By the way, speaking of almonds, the Palmans that you guys snapped up so quickly should be arriving in your mailboxes just about any day. Because I know that for two of us, they showed up in the mail this very day, and oh, that aroma, that crunch, that crispy, snacking, salty, delicious, roasted almond goodness. Thank you very kindly to Paul from Parts Unknown for his Palman challenge of a couple of weeks back. But brethren and sistren, we had a D-damn-licious birthday dinner there in the fellowship hall, and on this day, above all others, I was standing guard over at the dessert table, and I had to cast a mighty baleful glare at a couple of deacons to keep them away from that last slice of homemade apple layer cake with the caramel icing. But it worked, and I got me a slice. Can't have too many of them. I don't want to run my blood sugar up and get all diabetic again. But hoo-wee, mercy sakes. Oh, It was some kind of good fresh coffee to go with it. Decaf for me, thanks. That's right. 55, Brother Deacon Asa. Double nickel. And so the deacons then, having been fought back, trundled their massive bulk up the couple of flights of stairs and wandered out into the parking lot. It was a fairly unseasonably warm day here in Appalachistan, and they stood out there quite comfortable, really, in the 50-degree temperature, smoking with the sinners. They chain-smoked three or four before Sister Carol Baker appeared at the tabernacle door with the Cathedral of Common Sense solar-powered cattle prod crackling as she pressed the Happy Deacon button on it. And they quickly threw their cigarette butts to the earth, and Brother Deacon Gerald would appreciate it if you would use if the deacons would use the cigarette urn that he has kindly provided right there by the tabernacle door. Just throw it in there on your way through as you're avoiding the cattle prod, fellas. And they blew in there. They blew past Sister Carol Baker, past that desiccating bowl of butter mints, ran right through down the center aisle, and well, they're just taking it easy this evening, because there won't be any offertory hymn. We'll have the hymn, just no offerings, okay? Because this is the only religious institution that takes a break from passing the plate. So you don't have to worry about getting cronked in the head, brethren and sistren. You can just, every head can be bowed and every eye can be closed, and you don't have to keep one open, and you don't have to worry about your neighbor giving you a concussion with that heavy brass plate with the red velvet lining. Don't have to worry about that in the least, brethren and sistren. So that being the case, with every head bowed and every eye closed, brethren and sistren, I'm going to call the minister of music up to lead us in our opening, not offertory, hymn. Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! This man is clinically insane!
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sistren. Welcome, welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. How glory. I'm a calling on you right now, brethren and sistren, right now. Just get on up out of your seats and get up onto your feet and wiggling, waggling, wobbling, and scrinching, scrunchle. And come on out from the pews, from amongst the pews, and come on down that blood-red aisle and fall upon your knees at the altar and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays of common sense a-flowing through you from the server on high. Amen. I am Archpope, Uber Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized, Agnostic, Vicarious Vicar, Maximum Metropolitan, Magnificent Mufti Bob Kincaid, and this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday from the Cathedral of Common Sense. Brethren and sisters, I want you to know that there is a spirit of revival afoot in the land. Yes, there is, and the apostle of that revival is none other than the less intelligent son, which is really a matter, it's a distinction without a difference, the difference between the intelligence levels of Donald Jr. and Irk. But it's Irk Trump, the less intelligent son of Donald. And today, being Prayer Meeting Wednesday, being the day after the State of Disunion address last night, we'll get into that some more here in a little bit, most likely. After the State of Disunion and all the snake handling that went on in the speechifying last night, lots of God blathering scattered and salted and peppered throughout that speech. Irk Trump was immediately called forth to bear witness to his daddy's holiness there on that unwatchable TV program, what they run over there to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda each and every morning. And he said that he was focused on the Democrats whilst his daddy was reading his speech very slowly and poorly. And he said to the Democrats, "I think they're scared." Mm-hmm. And he was mad at the Democrats for not standing when his philandering, adulterous, heathen, not a Christian daddy. Let's let Eric deal with it, shall we?
Eric, Newt Gingrich was on, former speaker, and he was on with us, and he said the speech was so phenomenal and so good. He said he hopes that your dad will stay on message and won't go to Twitter and say anything wild and crazy before the Sunday shows, because he said he thinks the Democrats are going to taunt him and put the, you know, dangle the carrot in front of him and try to get him to say something before the Sunday shows. What's your response?
Maybe. What I did see last night, though, is I was focused on the Democrats, and I honestly think they're scared. You know, if I look around the room, they don't have that message. They don't have the personality to go against him. They were sitting there. They looked, quite frankly, defeated. I thought it was really interesting. I mean, they didn't stand for anything. When they said, "In God we trust," when my father mentioned, "In God we trust," the guiding principle
right.
of this country, no one stood. When he talked about the American flag.
You know what, Eric?
Just a moment there. Just to make sure we're all square on this, brethren and sisters, "In God we trust" is not the guiding principle of this country. That may play for Emery and Marveline sitting there watching Fox and Friends whilst gumming their Malto meal, but it's not the guiding principle of this country. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff you can actually put out in front of that as a guiding principle of this country, things like, Novus Ordo Seclorum, or A Pluribus Unum out of many, one, or, you know, Novus Ordo Seclorum, as I mentioned, you know, a new order of the ages. New order? Oh, my God, the Illuminati. Right, yeah. But in God we trust? No, that's not the guiding principle of this country. A nation of laws and not of men. That could be said to have once upon a time been a guiding principle of this country. Of course, it isn't anymore. But you get the idea.
We actually got a montage that shows when he was talking about certain things that you would think everybody would stand up to. They did not. Watch.
Wait, montage? Isn't that French? Why do you hate America, Brian Kilmeade or Steve Doofus? Why? Why?
This.
I call upon all of us to set aside our differences, to seek out common ground, and to summon the unity we need to deliver for the people. This is really the key.
Okay, so this is part of a montage. And, you know, Eric probably thinks that's something something dirty that his daddy did with a couple of Russian hookers once. You know, a montage à trois. Right, but no. See, I don't... I'm still kind of back there about what I said when he first was made president by the Electoral College. No collaboration, and especially given what we know now, a year and change in, to be unified with Donald Trump is to be unified with his base. To be unified with Donald Trump is to be unified with, oh, I don't know, Klansmen. To be unified with Donald Trump is to be unified with Nazis, with xenophobes, bigots, homophobes, the absolute worst of the scum of the bottom of the barrel of this once great nation. And I don't know about you. Well, I've got a pretty good idea considering we're all a little family community congregation. I don't want to have any unity with any of the likes of those. I'll pass on being unified with a goddamn homicidal bunch of Nazis marching around hollering things like, you will not replace us, and all obsessed with 14 words and 88 words and tattoos on their necks. And no, it passed, thanks. I'll take disunity any day of the week over that kind of filth. But, you know, that's me.
These are the people we were elected to serve. Hispanic American unemployment has also reached the lowest levels in history.
Thanks, Obama.
Preston's reverence for those who have served our nation reminds us of why we salute our flag and why we proudly stand for the national anthem. In America,
if that great big bearded juvenile delinquent who we pay some attention to, the imaginary one, if he was real, there would have been a lightning bolt of monumental proportions that just come right down when he started talking about reverence for the military, just bzz, zap, gone. Because old draft dodging bone spur Donnie there has about as much regard for the American military as a hog does for a knife and fork when it's sitting at the trough. To wit, none. If he had any regard for the American military, well, you know, he might have, not dodged the draft. Chicken shit.
We know that faith and family, not government and bureaucracy, are the center of American life. The motto is, in God we trust.
Some of the things that...
Yeah, by the way, as Hung Like Jesus points out, you know who didn't stand when he pulled that family and flag bullshit? His wife. Yeah. Melanoma was there, and she didn't seem any too happy to be there. No, not at all. Maybe more on that in a minute.
Democrats refused to stand during tax reform talk, national anthem, God, veterans care, fair trade, stock market, infrastructure, deal for dreamers, immigration, military, and of course the last item, low African American unemployment. Eric.
Yeah, low. The last item. Well, maybe they didn't stand for him for that because he was taking credit for it, and he's not entitled to it. That's another one of those thanks Obama moments. And by the way, I haven't seen that he's tweeted anything stupid today, which means he hasn't tweeted. But he's got to be seething because his first State of the Union address drew 8 million fewer sets of eyeballs than Barack Obama's State of the Unions. Terrible ratings, very bad ratings, horrible. You know that's gnawing at him. Mm-hmm. And all those bonuses and stuff that he, and raises that he blathered on about. Yeah, when it comes right down to working people, works out to about a 0.0017% increase for all American workers. Hoo-wee, that's some tax relief, isn't it? And the rubes are going to wind up having to give it back, too. You schmucks.
Extraordinary, because there are things there that bring us all together.
You know, it's amazing, though, but I was watching the body language, and they would look at each other. Should we stand? Should we not? I'd see Chuck Schumer looking at Nancy Pelosi. Should we stand? You know, do we clap? Do we not clap? I mean, it was awkward. I remember one great moment, right? He talked about Apple bringing $350 billion back into the country. $350 billion, not a single Democrat stood up. And I'm sitting there, who wouldn't want Apple to bring $350 billion.
Well, see, this is why he's the dim son. It's not that they weren't clapping because the Apple brought back the whatever. They weren't clapping because they weren't willing to give Trump credit for something that Trump was not entitled to. But when you start using words with more than one syllable, you lose Eric there.
Back into the economy, right. and no one stood.
Why? What does that say to you about the Democrats?
I think it's actually very sad. I think it's sad. There are things that, as Americans, we should be united on. And if we can't be united on God, if we can't be united on African American unemployment being at the lowest it's ever been, if we can't be united on the fact that the economy is $8 trillion richer, or that Apple brings $350 billion back in. And honestly, I think they're scared. I really...
Shut up. Notice the first thing he said was united on God. Well, see, the very nature of our country is that the people who wrote its organizing principles up, that thing we call the Constitution, recognized that folks tend not to be united on God. And that the best thing for anybody to do, as far as government was concerned, was to not endorse any particular vision or philosophy of a deity. Because when governments get in the religion business, that's how things like pogroms start. Honestly, it is. It is. But that's not all we got. It is prayer meeting Wednesday. And there are tales out there of faith in action. Take, for instance, and I bet you our buddy Jeff from Hellhole, Talibandiana, knows this story. There's a little community in Indiana. And the name of that community is Rushville, I think. Rushville? Rushville. And out in Rushville, there's a church, of course, it's Talibandiana. There's one every 15 feet. But the name and that particular church is the Rushville Baptist Temple, which for years was led by a man named Gary with two R's Evans. Gary Evans is 72. Well, back in October, the local constabulary came along and arrested Brother Pastor Minister Gary Evans on 5 counts. You might want to get a bucket and keep it handy because this gets pretty nauseating. On 5 counts of child solicitation, 4 counts of sexual battery, and 3 counts of child molestation. Hell no. It sounds like he and Roy Tolamore could get together and have a high old time. Gary Evans likes him even younger than Roy Tolamore does. Because the cops took action after a 3-year-old little girl told her mama that Pastor Gary Evans pulled down his pants and made her touch his genitals. In the name of Jesus, of course. And then the floodgates sort of broke open, and it turned out that he had a habit of trying to lure little girls under age 10 into his pastoral office by offering them candy. One victim told police that Pastor Brother Minister Evans, man of God, servant of Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, laughed at her when she told him she didn't want to. She said he touched her nearly every time she went to church. Yeah, that's when Rushville Police Chief Craig Tucker made public inquiry to see if there were more victims. And more victims there were. So about a month later, Pastor, Brother, Minister, servant of the Prince of Peace, Jesus Christ, Gary Evans, tried to save the people of Rushville, Talibandiana, the cost of trial by trying to off himself. The cops found him unresponsive, and they resuscitated him, and airlifted him to Indiana University Methodist Hospital there in Indianapolis. You still with me here? Well, he survived, and he's up and around and so forth. And so it was that this past Sunday, the 28th of January, Gary Evans, age 72, and his wife, Gay, that's her name, Gay Evans. She's 70. Well, they went to a house there in Rushville and commenced to banging on the door. And when somebody came to the door, a woman came to the door. And looked at him and said, y'all got to go. You're not welcome here. Leave. Because apparently Gary Evans and Gay Evans' son was in there. I reckon they saw the woman as a temptress or a Jezebel or one of those fun words that the Christians like to use against women. And having been told to leave, they refused. Pastor, Brother, Minister of Jesus Christ, Gary Evans, and his wife, Gay. And so the woman who was living in the house, this is, after all, Merca,
the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, in the universe, forever, under God.
So the woman in the house went and fetched a shooting iron and proceeded to instruct Pastor Brother Minister Gary Evans and his wife, Gay, that she was fully prepared to use it if they didn't leave. Then she thought better of it and got a baseball bat. And eventually held them at bay until the police could arrive. And the police came and arrested both Gay and Gary Evans. And Gay Evans got all cantankerous and tried to open a can of whoop-ass on the local constabulary, who then arrested her too. Pastor Brother Minister Gary, on a trespass charge, was booked into jail without any bond. Mrs. Evans got out, because, of course, she has not been charged with trying to diddle any little girls, otherwise known as sexually molest any little girls, and stayed with her husband, right? And so then Mama Gay took to calling the house that they had just been run off with, from with a combination of a gun and a baseball bat, leaving a message saying, "I just got out of jail. I hope you're a very happy son. Your daddy's in there, and he's probably going to be staying in there. What's wrong with you? You're sick," says the wife of a man who has multiple counts of child sexual abuse lodged against him. Another family member called him and said, "This is insane. What the fuck is wrong with you?" Again, "You stupid idiot." Another Christian. Another woman called and said, "You're fine with them arresting your 72-year-old father and 70-year-old mother? Really? Really? Are you that big a piece of scum?" Now, mind you, these are all people calling someone a piece of scum in defense of a guy who is charged with sexually molesting, in the name of Jesus Christ, of course, little girls under 10. Anybody want to guess which way the Evanses vote? Yeah. You know, because God is love, y'all. Mm-hmm. Oh no, we've got lots and lots to talk about this evening. We haven't even gotten to the State of the Union yet, because there's a little bit more stuff to get after. Really weird stuff, because it is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I mentioned Fat Dead Tony Scalia a couple of minutes ago. Well, he, even though he's all dead, got himself a reference in the one of those, and it's all tax-free, a kind of religious broadcasts. There's a right-wing pastor, brother, minister, servant of the Most High, follower of the Prince of Peace, by the name, and oh, he's a real Lulu, I might add. It goes by the name of Lance Wallnau, Wallnau. And I don't know if he's just a little slow on the uptick or what, but he's trying to figure out how the world works, and you know, why good things happen to bad people and whatnot. And so that's why he fired up his camera there on the Facebook the other day. namely last night. And came up with an explanation for something that nobody's really wondering about. But you've always got to be trying to come up with a new hustle when you're working the religion industry. Yeah. So let's go to the right.
Do you want to know one of the reasons why I believe that people came out and voted so conscientiously for Trump, even though they weren't sure that they liked him, that they voted for him, and they did not vote for Hillary? And one of the main reasons...
Voted so conscientiously for him, and they voted for him, and they didn't vote for Hillary. Do you see how the memory hole works here? These clowns just breeze past the fact that more people did not vote for Donald Trump than voted for Hillary Clinton. In those empty, dusty, spider-filled, mostly consumed by lizard brain spaces inside their crania. It just doesn't matter. Yeah. People voted conscientiously for Donald Trump. Well, not enough voted for him to win. Just enough voted for him for bloody relic from our slave past, our slave torturing, slave owning, slave tormenting past, the Electoral College. You know, just enough voted for him in just the right places to let that relic of slavery make a president out of him. But yeah, no, it's going to get weird. This is just weird. Not really hockey puck material, just weird.
Reasons why was because of the death of Antonin Scalia. And I'm looking at the Supreme Court, and I remember thinking, and it's important to slow down your brain sometimes and go back in time and look at this. Did you feel as I did this sense of, oh my God, this is the one Christian, this is the one verifiable Christian on the Supreme Court, filled with vim, vigor, articulate, engaging, witty, powerful, and forced to be reckoned with. And I remember he was even talking when the journalists were interviewing him, and he was talking to them about reading C.S. Lewis and the Screwtape Letters, which is brilliant. He was challenging the guy to read them, the journalist interviewing him. Anyway, when Scalia died, so many people thought it was, that he was killed. And I didn't.
Some of us thought maybe that he was an octogenarian who had spent a lifetime eating the kind of diet that probably doesn't let you live much past 80. But, you know, as Lance Wall now points out, some people thought he was killed. Those people tend to live in bell jars in Ripley's Believe It or Not auditorium, but never mind.
And I didn't want to even go down that road. I was just stunned. Here's what I was saying. Whether something as precarious as the Supreme Court, as delicate as the Supreme Court is, that we lose marriage, we lose so many things because the court is now politicized. It's not even, it's now, if we can't afford to lose a conservative because it's already got a preponderance of liberals on it. And I thought, Lord, is this a judgment on America? Well, look how brilliant God is. You know, the Lord controls life and death. It's possible that if Antonin Scalia had lived, the urgency to support this president and his nominations might not have been so strong. You might have had Hillary Clinton in the White House. And you might have had maybe three appointments made during the next 4 years, during the next 3 years. Who knows? Two appointments for sure. We already got one. You could have had Clinton making the appointments, and then the balance of power would have overpowered a Scalia vote on the Supreme Court. And who knows what kind of issues are going that way. All that I'm saying is we don't always see the long-term picture, but it could be that the Lord in his infinite insight saw that Scalia, him being a loss, might be the event that motivated the majority of people to show up. And I think Trump is that important, and Hillary Clinton would have been that disastrous, that it's a major game of chess going on in the spirit realm over how things happen.
Chess in the spirit realm. Yeah, queen to queen's level 3. What? You know, it's probably, I hope nobody sends this to Fat Dead Tony's family or anything and explains to, in an attempt to explain to them that God killed their beloved family member. Because remember, you know, look, I hated his decisions. He was a smug, pompous, prickly asshole who never had any business on the Supreme Court to begin with. He created and crafted monumental temples to bullshit in the form of constitutional originalism that he assiduously followed until, you know, he didn't because it was inconvenient. But the fact of the matter is, and it's kind of weird, but the notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who, by the way, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, ammo-sexual, fundamentalist, Christian, pastor, brother, minister, former presidential candidate, diabetes, snake oil, cure salesman, Mike Huckabee, mocked last week. Yes, yes. Because he's a good Christian. Well, Justice Ginsburg and Justice Alito were dear, dear, dear friends. And she was horribly saddened when he went down to that secret society hunting club in Texas and went to bed and didn't get up again. She really was. And so I hope nobody sends his family this video explaining that that Jesus killed him so that a heretical, unchristian, adulterous, whoremongering, warmongering liar could become president. Because I think that would be pretty hurtful to send to them. It'd be downright shitty and mean. And, of course, since this man is a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, ammo-sexual Christian, he's pretty shitty and mean from jump anyway. Do you really think the maggots, and by the way, that's maggots, we don't, M-A-G-A-T-S, maggots, morons are governing America, Trumpansie scum, maggots. Do you think the maggots do that kind of higher order thinking? Do they really? Or do they just march when they're told to march? I tend to think it's the latter. They have what is called discipline. They wanted power. They wanted to see that power exercised. And they acted in, well, there's that word, unity to make sure that power was exercised. And now we're all suffering for it. But on the other side of that coin is the fact that our side had a chance to act with unity. Our side had a chance to try to keep Democrats in charge of the White House. Our side had a chance to be single-minded in its determination to keep a dangerous, warmongering, adulterous, philandering, whoremongering, corrupt, Russian-owned subsidiary out of the White House. We had that chance. And some among us chose not to take that chance. And now all of us have to live with the consequences. Uh, A few notes coming in as we wind up the lesson. Ron in Raleigh wrote and said, on the 1A on NPR today, subject line, the truth ain't in them, there was a panel discussion about Dolt 45's State of Disunion speak. On the panel was Jill Upson, a black female Republican from West Virginia's 65th district. What's up with this self-hating Negress? She was heaping praise on the nectarine Nero. How does a seemingly intelligent black woman not see the racism of this man? Not one of the panel members seemed to hear the loud dog whistling going on. Meanwhile, the head of the Centers for Disease Control, Brenda Fitzgerald, had to step down because of some unfortunate stock purchases made after she became director. I'm going to hire the best people, said Trump. What bullshit! Yes, those unfortunate stock purchases. Those were unfortunate stock purchases of stock in tobacco companies. And that really doesn't look good for... doesn't look good at all for the head of the CDC. No. As for Jill Upson, look, this is the Trumpiest state in the union. And that's going to include people of color. She's a straight-up teabagger. And when she was elected to the House of Delegates, she became, in the... 155-year-old history of this state. She became the first woman of color elected to the West Virginia House of Delegates who was also at the same time a Republican. She's a darling of Newsmuck, among other things. She is a military wife, married to a naval officer, retired. And I guess you know, since she's married to a retired naval officer, maybe they've got it good enough that that it can make them deaf to the racism of the guy in office. Best I got. Brother Deacon Asa wants to take a run at Lance Wallnow. Let me see if I caught up with Brother Wallnow. So the bearded juvenile delinquent sky spook knocked off Fat Tony to help a serial philandering scumsucker get to the White House. Well, by Jove, Brother Deacon Asa, that was so succinct. It was almost Zen and haiku-like. Absolutely. Yep. Ron and Raleigh also added, you know how Dolt 45 talks about $1.5 trillion of spending? The actual number he's committed to is $200 billion in infrastructure and hopes to leverage the rest. That $300 billion being repatriated will be used to buy back stock so they can enrich the CEO and stockholders. I hate these lying sons of bitches. I understand the sentiment, Ron. The other day I saw, on MSNBC, I saw a graphic referring to the anticipated $1 trillion federal infrastructure plan. And then they went on to say that it only had $200 billion of federal money in it, which caused me to remark that if your $1 trillion federal infrastructure plan only has $200 billion in it, then sort of applying principles of logic, it's not a $1 trillion federal infrastructure plan. It's a $200 billion infrastructure plan, and the rest of it is, you know, another GOP scam. Seems pretty clear to me. Meanwhile, Albert, writing from Rhode Island, says, Bob, happy birthday. Well, thank you, Albert. The Providence, Rhode Island newspaper's headline read, A Call for Unity. Dork leader said that during his speech last night. I want to see him try to lead us by example. Well, he's already trying. He's putting the example out there. It's just that if we all follow the example, well, those of us who are married will probably be promptly divorced. Those of us who do not have sexually transmitted diseases will probably find ourselves squealing when we try to pee. And those of us who try to emulate him financially, well, we don't have any Russian sugar daddies to fall back on, and we'll find ourselves living over subway grates and under overpasses and drinking screw-top wine and so forth. That's the problem there. Meanwhile, Scott and Punky with a note, so to length. We're being told that Trump's Ramble Fest last night was the third longest in the history of State of the Union addresses. It would probably take the editing skills of someone who could tolerate hearing last night's speech again, but I'd like someone to time it out with all the applause bits excised. And what was with the constant standing ovations? Furthermore, how did they manage to have all the GOPers fitted so quickly for springs on their asses? Don't forget Joe Manchin. He had one, too. I haven't seen such continuous up-and-down action since I toured the Consumer Reports testing facility the day they were working on an article about pogo sticks. Okay, I'll give you a jingle for the pogo sticks, Scott. Even though we know that Punky came up with it. He's a ventriloquist. He's doing it all. Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, subject line Scalia, do you think these evangelical hucksters ever tell their followers that Scalia was a Catholic? Are you kidding me? The Field's third commandment is don't smarten up a chump. And they may not be good at the 10 Hebrew ones, but they're very good at the three that Fields enunciated. Very, very good indeed. Meanwhile, our buddy Todd, Barbecue Todd, down in South Carolina, stand subject line voting. Please remind us to vote straight D in the next few contests. Well, I can't do that, Todd, because then I'll get cranky notes from emails from people saying, quit telling us how to vote, Bob. And I had enough of that back before the one question quadrennial IQ test was administered and a whole bunch of people failed it. Meanwhile, Arthur, subject line Afro GOP, says, "Hey, right wingery is not skin color specific. She probably cares more about the right wing agenda, taxes, corporatism, Christian values, etc." than civil rights, and as long as she's one of the ones that are accepted by them and she's secure in her position, she's okay. Igumfu, I got mine. You, oh yeah, happy birthday, Mr. Kincadia Bob. Thank you, Arthur. Thank you very, very kindly. with regard to Wall now, Heather says, this pastor sounded like he was having a Gorsuch chasm. Which just, well, that there were plans for a little birthday dinner after the program was over, but, well, Heather, I think you just put paid to that. Yep. Randy, meanwhile, points out, Randy in PA, Trump didn't really win the Electoral College either, given the voter suppression issue. Maybe not. It's all Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Not that we'll ever be able to really count and find out. No. More voter suppression news is out there, and hopefully we'll get to that as well. Mm-hmm. So, as they say in the professional religion circles, here endeth the lesson. We'll take a little break and jump right back into it out of the said break. And with that being the case, I have a little piece of news for you. And it has to do with how we go about reaching the program. New to the program, and look, everybody and their cousin, just about, now has a dialing program that lets them call anywhere from anywhere, inside the U.S. at least, toll-free. You know, there's no long-distance charges anymore. But there are still some people out there who have landlines and don't have unlimited long distance. So with that in mind, Brother Deacon Asa got real creative and has set up, that's right, a toll-free number for the horn. Mm-hmm. That toll-free number is easy to remember. If you don't have unlimited long distance or toll-free long distance on your plan, if you'd like to call the program but it's a long-distance call to you, well, that problem is now solved. That new number is 844-THE-HORN. 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 That's 844-843-4676. 844-843-4676. 844-THE-HORN. Gets you right into the program. So we'll take a little break, and then we can see if anybody wants to talk, if anybody's got anything on their minds, or else, you know, if you want to talk about the that disastrous speech last night, you're welcome to. Or I can filibobster about it. We can go about, well, it's entirely up to y'all, because this is a community radio program. It's not some ego fest on my part. So decide, and we'll see what that decision is. It's prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. Me, I'm Brother Bob Kincaid.
Shadow of the forest, though she may be old and worn, they will stare unbelieving at the last unicorn. When the first breath of winter through the flowers is icing, and you look to the north, and a pale moon
like all is dying, and would leave the world to mourn. In the distance, hear the laughter of the last unicorn. I'm alive. I'm alive. When the last moon is cast over the last star of morning, and the future has passed without even a last desperate warning, then look into the sky where through the clouds a path is torn. Look and see her, how she sparkles. It's the last unicorn.
The Last Unicorn. What do you think of that? That I mentioned the quadrennial, the quadrennial one question IQ test, and it just happened. It's like magic that way. 16 minutes past the hour, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you very kindly for setting that up. The toll free number. And basically, what it is it's all ringing into the same computer. It's not like there's an extra line now. It's all just magic with one phone number. So that's how that works. Reading the chat room, Albany Bear says, both yesterday and today, that relic of slavery, Electoral College, has been mentioned. Does anybody know if Bob knows about the NPVIC? Yes, I know about it. And... what does that stand for? National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, I think. And it's a nice enough idea, but while I'm not a constitutional originalist like Fat Dead Tony Scalia, I believe if something is a problem, you remove the problem. In other words, the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact is an attempt to circumvent the Electoral College, but to the extent that it so does, it is also, how can I put it, subject to constitutional challenge. For instance, Republicans could have a hissy about it and sue, and given the swine that make up the right wing of the court, conceivably win, striking down something like a national popular vote interstate compact. The Electoral College is, in fact, a relic of slavery, and it needs to be excised from the Constitution. It's an effort worth making. And I really wish some elected representative would introduce the requisite legislation to repeal it as a constitutional amendment. It wouldn't be a terribly complex thing. Like I said last night, I know what the objection would be, but the fact of the matter is, it is as far as constitutionally enshrined practices and procedures, it's just about the last remaining anti-democratic thing in there. So you don't the three-fifths clause is still technically in the Constitution, but it was rendered moot by the 13th Amendment. So you don't have to have a constitutional amendment to strike out those words. That was effectively accomplished by the 13th Amendment. But if you want to stop the Electoral College, the only way to stop it for sure, the only way to kill it and make sure it's dead and stays that way, is to repeal it in the Constitution. Yes, I know, it's a complicated process, it's a time-consuming process, but that doesn't mean it doesn't need to be done. How about that? Our buddy Robert in Australia recognized the song. Believe it or not, I have a copy of The Last Unicorn on vinyl somewhere in the archives. An animated movie from the 80s? I do believe so. And yeah, America did the theme song. But I thought we had just talked about the one-question quadrennial IQ test that all those unicorns failed. And it seemed appropriate to make mention of it. Okay, let's run over to the phones and check in. Hey, welcome to the program.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Oh, wow, far out. I put that on the chat room about the National Popular Vote Interstate Commerce, and then when I dialed the number, you started talking. I heard you talking about it, so you've answered my question. You are aware of it.
Yeah, and I mean it's not a terrible idea. It just doesn't address the underlying problems of the Electoral College.
Well, I mean, I understand that it, you know, in order to put a stake through the Electoral College's heart, you'd have to have a constitutional amendment. But as they always say, that's a heavy lift. And in the meantime, I think the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact is a good way around it.
If it's constitutional,
okay, I that's true. I mean, there's certainly some argument about that.
We've got interstate compacts for driver's licenses and license plates and DUI convictions and things like that. But I'd kind of hate to see. I mean, I'm not saying I would oppose an effort. But I'd hate to see this be the route that we take to get rid of something as nefarious and pernicious as the Electoral College, because it's one thing for Ohio and West Virginia to agree that if your license has been revoked for DUI in Ohio, it's revoked for DUI in West Virginia. It's another thing to take something as heady as presidential elections and subject it to that process. And in some ways, first name? Just first name, so we can talk.
My name?
Yeah.
Oh, Michael.
Okay, Michael. In some ways, Michael, I hate for presidential politics to be reduced to that level. But moreover, getting a whole bunch of states to enact that is not that far different from getting a whole bunch of states to ratify a constitutional amendment to eliminate the Electoral College.
I've never sat down and done the math. I know that there's 100 and I just looked today. I think there's like 160 electoral votes covered now, and you need, what, 270?
Yeah.
And yeah. So, you know, they're 110 short. I don't know. I the only reason I call, Bob, is that every time I hear someone, and you said twice today, you said how bad the Electoral College is, and don't misunderstand me. I agree, but then all that people talk about is an amendment, and it's never been it isn't brought up. When people don't bring it up, I said maybe that's one reason we don't know about it. A lot of people don't know about this. It's incredible what some people that I think would know about this, people, intelligent people, educated people, people that are into politics, whether they're educated or not, don't even know it exists.
Look where so many people, Michael, get their news. You could watch any of the alphabet soup cable and over the air broadcast news networks for a month of Sundays and into the next blue moon, and never hear this mentioned, because it's considered to be sort of esoteric. And the other part of it is the ho-hum thing. You know, oh, ho-hum, well, you know, sometimes if you're going to have a constitutional republic, you're going to have to break some eggs, or, you know, destroy the republic. And it can't be reduced to a horse race graphic, or, you can't bring on some former member of some presidential administration to pontificate about it, because they don't know about it either.
Well, the one person I did hear say something about it was Joe Biden, when he was on some talk radio, or it was actually on television, because I remember seeing him say it when they asked him about that. And he said, well, the only people that have half a shot are the National Popular Vote and the Interstate Compact. I mean, he gave it some credibility, but then that was the end of the discussion. Nothing more was said. And so I just like to see it out there more. I'd like to see when people say, well, an amendment would be difficult, but there is this other thing, so there are ways around it, but that doesn't happen. Twice you said it in the last 2 days, and you haven't mentioned it.
No, and I didn't, because
I'm not blaming you.
No, I understand. But I also think there's tremendous symbolic value in something that has to start, or should start, inside the Congress. It could be, you know, among other things, it could serve, and I'm not a big one for symbolic acts, but when you're in the minority, most everything you do winds up being symbolic. And that symbolism needs to, you know, that we need a statement that the Electoral College's day has come and gone. I mean, I'm trying to think. I think. And I mean, this has been a problem for a very long time, Michael. I think one of the first people...
Tell me, I'm 70 years old.
I've
lived through it twice.
Yeah. But I think Andrew Jackson was the first president to raise the issue of the Electoral College not being a good idea. Andrew freaking Jackson. And we
but
just
yet we still have it. It
right, because nobody really wants to, nobody, you know, nobody, no, nobody wants to fool with it, I guess.
Well, okay, I just wanted to make sure it's out there, and that your listeners, what percentage of your listeners do you think are aware of it?
Roughly, we've got a pretty plugged in and informed. I mean, it's been discussed on this program in the past.
Okay, that's all I wanted to make sure of.
Yeah,
I had never heard it.
It actually has been. And in fact, I think there was a Friday on the Front Porch conversation some months back where it actually took up a considerable amount of conversational space that evening. So,
all right, then I have my work here is done then.
Well,
and my question has been answered.
Well, I hope this is not your first and last call, Michael. It's been a lovely conversation.
Oh, no. Well, I don't know. The last time I would have called was I was out walking, and it was the night, it was National Football, night. I can't remember now. wasn't that long ago. Anyway, I was walking and I was recording the game. I was waiting to pick someone up. I was recording the game. And I said, okay, one place I know where I won't hear any score is, you know, on Head On.
And then I ruined it.
I won't hear it. No, you didn't. One of your callers did. But it was okay. it was okay because as soon as he said, I think SC had scored first, and he said it, and he's one of your regular callers, they had scored, and I went, oh, no, and I turned it off. But it didn't matter because they just got – their clocks clean, which was okay for me as the University of California Berkeley fan. I love seeing SC get
go Bears.
Hammered. So that's go Bears. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, Michael, you have yourself a good evening. You take care. Great to hear from you.
You too.
Bye
okay.
now.
Hey, bye.
That was a fun conversation. And the first time caller. Wait a minute. Every first time caller, we can't send you a T-shirt or anything, but. You can darn sure get a cowbell. Those are free. Oh, wait a minute. It is not that cold outside. There's no reason for my neighbor to be burning that goddamn coal. But the sneezing has started. Thank you for the kind wishes to our buddy Keith. Happy birthday. Thanks for all you do. Thank you, Keith. Thank you very, very kindly. Much, much, much appreciated. Much appreciated indeed. As far as... the NPVIC is concerned, if it's something that interests you, and I'm not saying that it doesn't interest me. I just happen to know that with the bunch of mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing freaks that we have that passes for a legislature down here, hard at work doing things like making the Bible a mandatory literature class in every high school in the state. And boy, your tax dollars at work. It's probably a futile effort for us right now, but if you've got a legislature that you think that this could get some traction in, see what's going on in that legislature and see if you can get somebody to introduce a bill. And if you have to, the argument to be made is, look, so far the Electoral College has always operated to the benefit of a Republican. But it's statistically impossible that that will always be the case. There's just no reason in the 21st century to let that archaic piece of racist garbage continue to impact what the people who are paid and ought to know better refer to as our democracy. You know, which, of course, it isn't now, hasn't ever been. So, you know, work on it. See if you can generate some interest. Checking back to the email. Elbert writes, Bob, I saw an interesting political cartoon recently. It was titled The Devolution of the GOP. Four presidents were in the cartoon. Abe Lincoln was on the far left. To his right was Nixon. Then comes George W. And on the far right is Dork Leader. And I'll bet it was done as that sort of in the reverse of the knuckle walker up to the human walking upright. And this was the backwards. I think I've seen it. Yes. Oh, and I got a really nice email here from a brand new listener, and this is some good stuff. This comes from Scott, who says, "Well, howdy, Bob. Found your radio program by accident while I was deer hunting last November. That's a beautiful thing all by itself." Yeah, we, you know, here at the Horn, I mow grass with people. My buddy Dennis down in Kentucky. The Horn, I've gone all kinds of places with all kinds of people and never had to leave home. I remember one time, Brother Deacon Asa sent a photograph of him listening to the horn at 30,000 feet somewhere over Arizona. Been all over the place, and now I've been deer hunting, which is good because I'm a terrible shot. I was never successful at killing any deer. But I had some lovely, heavily armed walks in the woods. I found your radio program by accident while I was deer hunting last November. It was a slow morning, so I pulled out the phone and I opened up the Progressive Talk, put in the earbuds, and started surfing a little. My usual channels had like some colon cleanse product or something like that, so I went down channels and I noticed the Head On Radio Network, so I punched that in, and lo and behold, there you were, and you were talking about the U.S. failing the one question quadrennial IQ test, and I got kind of hooked. I hope you don't mind that I've used that line a few times since. Use it in good health. I'm always happy to see a turn of phrase find a good home. A little bit about myself. White, heterosexual, Christian male, meat eater, hunter, gun owner. Served in the military 4 years active, 28 years in the reserves. Spent 5 years away from my family since January 17th, 2003, and retired in 2015. I'm also a union carpenter. Yay for a union carpenter. We've got other union carpenters in this little family community congregation. In fact, a union carpenter founded this little family community congregation. I just retired at the beginning of 2016. I'm sitting pretty good with my demographics. I could be a maggot, as you call them. But I want a future for my grandkids, and that's why the left just needs to grow up and flood the voting booths. It's so depressing, losing all the time. Last Monday night, I was listening to your broadcast. It was a rerun from earlier that evening. It's about 10 o'clock at night, and I hate to say this, but when I listen to my radio anymore, I feel like Corporal LeBeau pulling out the radio after Sergeant Schultz leaves the barracks. It almost feels criminal. I heard you talk about the newspapers and how we're losing some of the local ones where we will be limited on the news we get. It kind of seems to be the case all around. I get the newspaper around here, and I usually look at the opinion page. One of the articles starts out, "What a breath of fresh air having Trump, and how good it was to have a person that tells it like it is, calls a spade, but is it the truth or is it just what you want to hear? Right-wing nuts seem to hate the truth, but like to hear what makes them feel good. You know, the things that make the taint tingle." Well, by God, here's your first cowbell, Scott. I think taint tingler has just entered the lexicon here in the Horn Studio. Well, by God, if that ain't a taint tingler. Oh, yeah, that's going to work. That's going to work real good. There was another one that was mad because the Journal did an article on former governors in Wisconsin. One of our governors, Bob La Follette, fighting Bob, and he was a Republican, but he was a progressive, stood for workers' rights, and the state did pretty well under him. I was not alive yet, but from what I read, he sounded like a good, honest man, and these Republicans got to face it. They're no longer the party of Bob La Follette, Lincoln, Teddy Roosevelt, or Ike. If they were, I'd probably be a Republican. These former Republicans looked forward and were statesmen. They had honor and cared about the country. It's just crazy what we're left with today. Oh, yeah, I've spoken at the Fighting Bob Fest a couple of times a few years back, courtesy of our dear and departed friend Bruce. Those were amazing times. And, of course, among other things, and I never know, is it La Follette or La Follette? One way, you know, I got a 50% chance of screwing it up, and it's any other time I've got a 50% chance, you know, I've got a 50% chance, but it turns into a 100% chance of screwing it up. But whatever the proper pronunciation is, he also was absolutely brilliantly moral and ethical in his opposition to the First World War, and that is a portrait in courage. Anyway, Scott continues. Then there's the media now apologizing for the way they covered Trump. It kind of feels like they're the cause of it, but anybody in their right mind should have been able to make that right choice. The people of Wisconsin are all hurt because Hillary didn't come to the state, you know. I felt left out. People in Michigan, people in Pennsylvania, Hillary didn't come to see. We felt left out, all forgotten. Shit, they turned my state, Wisconsin, red, and that just hurts bad. Now, not only that, we ended up getting Ron Johnson, POS, once again for a senator instead of a man like Russ Feingold, and it just hurts kids. Yet that's the one I still haven't figured out. So the sparkle fart powered, you know, whatever, they ran to the, and they went and they voted for, you know, Jill can win. but they couldn't bring themselves to go down and maybe unseat Ron Johnson. One of the single dumbest hammer handles in a Senate majority full of idiotic dumb hammer handles. Really? No, I get it. Scott continues, it hurts the country. But, you know, once again, anybody in their right mind should have been able to make that right decision, whether the Democratic or independent candidate won and on the ballot in the state. This was about right and wrong. I just don't understand why liberals or the left can't figure it out. Look at the way the Republicans acted with Obama since 2008. It's just been a nightmare. And these people on the left don't vote. They call themselves progressives. They want all this stuff. But do they vote? Well, at least it isn't that corrupt Hillary that's in there, and that's from Bernie Bros. And I love Bernie. I voted for him in the primaries here in Wisconsin, but there was only two choices in the general, and boy, did we blow it. I like what you do, man. I'd like to sit down and go cup a coffee in this BS for a while. Keep it up, and we'll get through this thing without everything going down the shitter. It just seems bleak and not for me, but like I said, I got kids and grandkids. It's just getting harder and harder. I just hate this country going the third world status, but that seems to be the direction everybody wants to take us. And thanks for your time. Rock on, Bob. Take care. Scott. Scott, thank you for your time. That is a thoughtful and evocative expression of both opinion and, well, you know, reality. And feel free to chime in anytime, and I'll be happy to go off deer hunting at a distance with you, just any old time. If you want to flash freeze some, if you're a fisherman, and you want to flash freeze some walleye and send it down here, I'm certainly game for that too. Love me some walleye. Randy, we're not doing any fundraising talk this evening, but I'll answer your question. We nudged the Norske cash the check, and well, we don't. The cash the check challenge, the lick the Lithuanian, the nudge the Norske, beat the Swede. Those are all over with. This is a new year. We've got one challenge, the Trash Wisconsin challenge, courtesy of Ralphs, and we managed to do that. Thank you, Ralphs. Meanwhile, Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve down on the Gulf Coast, subject line: the science of peasantry. Bob, why should a Congress of millionaires give a righteous fuck about the will of the people? When did they ever? The Electoral College only dilutes the popular vote by decimal points. I hate myself sometimes for taking the darker view, however. I understand. It's not always fun being a little ray of sunshine, is it? But it's also kind of unavoidable. When did they ever? And, of course, that raises the issue of what is... His name was Charles Beard, and it was long about the time of the First World War, and he wrote a thing that is relevant to this day that I've mentioned a number of times on this program that is well worth the time it will take you to read it, called An Economic Interpretation of the Constitution. I bet it wouldn't even cost you anything over on those... electronic book formats. Charles Beard, An Economic Interpretation of the Constitution. Right-wingers and think tank, institute, foundation, heritage, competitive, enterprise, American, hate his guts. Because about 100 years ago, he spoke the truth about our system of government. Now, he wasn't saying, oh, hate America, down with America. Somebody find me a flag so I can burn it. Somebody play the national anthem. I feel like kneeling. No, it wasn't any of that shit. He just told the truth about the origins of the Constitution. And from his economic interpretation of the Constitution, as far as he could tell from where he stood, it seemed to him that the Constitution was written specifically to protect the wealth of the people who were writing it. And it really is a... it's almost unavoidable. And some and you know, it's not based on, it's not just that he wrote something, hey, wrote something that said, hey, this is what they did. It is an analysis of the Constitution itself, and it opened up an entire field of constitutional scholarship. And you can tell how much the right wing hates him for it, or hated him. No, to this day they hate him, because they write scurrilous things about him personally. Oh, well, you know, Charles Beard, you know, he grew his hair long and didn't use a proper dentifrice, and well, his clothes were terribly out of fashion, and he hated America. Without ever getting to the actual crux of his argument. See how that works? Yeah. So if you really want to get into the depth of this stuff, start there. Start with an economic interpretation of the Constitution by Charles Beard, and see if you don't walk away from it going, sounds pretty dead on to me. I mean, there's some time-based stuff. There's some it's got its irregularities. But the core nugget of it is, well, to my mind, and I think Dr. Bill O'Brien would say to his as well. By the way, he's back this week, and he had the axe handle out for 3 straight days. If you've never listened to Dr. Bill O'Brien, this is a good time to start. You can get his RSS feed over at whiterosesociety.org. He brought the axe handle this week, and as far as I know, he feels pretty, and he's got the credentials to say this kind of stuff, Dr. Bill does. Beard was right, which goes to the heart of what Steve wrote. Why should a Congress of millionaires give a righteous fuck about the will of the people? When did they ever? Yeah. Well, thank you, Darlene in Connecticut. Wishing you a great year. Happy 30th, Bob. It's my 25th 30th, and I hope to enjoy this one tremendously. So here at about 13 minutes before the hour, let's run over and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob.
What's up?
Well, since you got a nice email from a fellow Scott, and I don't mean culturally or ethnically Scott, but someone who shares my first name, I figured we could have the fraternity of Steves?
Yes.
Isn't that the term?
Yes, the fraternity of Steve.
Well, how many Scotts do we have? I know there's me, and now there's him.
And there's another.
Oh, yeah, there is in Europe somewhere.
No. That's 4 Scots. There's Scott in the chat room, and you, and Scott in Wisconsin, and the original Scott, except no substitutes, our buddy Scott.
Yeah, okay, so what is that, 4 or 5?
That's 4.
Okay.
3, sir.
We've got a slew of Scots, you might say. But anyway, I didn't call to talk about that.
Yeah, because I don't think we want to call y'all the sorority of Scott, because no.
Well, listen, there's no man in this part of the galaxy who fills out a sweater the way I do.
I am willing to take your word for that, and no photographic evidence is necessary.
Ooh, la la. Okay. Actually, I'm glad I made it to the phone to keep this Scott thing going. I was a little disconcerted over my horoscope today. And it said all day long, it says your lucky day, riches are in the forecast. All day long, you will have the Midas touch. Well, come to find out.
You didn't touch Punky, did you?
No, no, no.
Okay.
When you touch something, it doesn't turn to gold. It turns to a premium muffler with a lifetime guarantee as long as you own your car. You know? So I only just now screwed up the courage to go take a leap. You know? Never mind. Never mind.
Oh, that's a very half-hearted cowbell there, Scott.
All right, fine. Whatever. you already admitted you're not into symbolic efforts, so why bother with a tinkle, as it were? But I don't wish to
You're
be
really working it, aren't you?
I don't wish to be argumentative, Bob. I really, really don't. But this whole notion, what is that organization called that's trying to modify the Electoral College's impact?
Well, I mean, it's a concept. It's the National Popular Vote Interstate Compact.
All right. Well, that seems to be a symbolic thing. And just
it's not symbolic. If it was to succeed, it would, and everybody abided by it who was signatory to it, it would take the Electoral College out of play.
Well, that's all well and good, Bob, but as you are not a fan of symbolic efforts, I'm not a fan of jumping through flaming hoops needlessly. Why not do this? Here's a novel idea. In the states where there are people who want the next president to be a Democrat, why not rally your people and get them out to fucking vote? Like, oh, I don't know, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania.
Oh, you're going to go and get a shave with Occam's razor, are you?
Well, I mean, it seems like it's a tried and true thing that has worked in the past. And I'm sure its fatal flaw is that it requires some degree of responsibility on the part of people who are upset with outcomes that they had full impact in terms of somehow affecting, okay? But, I mean, it just strikes me as why not do what the old tried-and-true method is? When it's time to vote, show up. And in the months preceding that, rally as many fucking people as you can possibly rally and motivate to do the same thing, hopefully for your candidate.
Okay, I will engage on this one. What do you do when you do that and you still lose? I don't mean that you lose fair and square. What do you do when you do that and the districts are so gerrymandered that if you had 80% turnout on the Democratic side, you still couldn't win? What do you do when you do that and the voter suppression is so profound that people who've been voting at the same precinct for 30 years suddenly find themselves not registered to vote? What do you do then?
Well, I mean, that is a serious matter that will need to be addressed if that kind of stuff goes on, which I'm sure it does in places. I'm not that naive. But it, like the other night, you were talking to someone about the business of the Democrats retaking the House of Representatives. And the way that you described it, the task at hand for later this year, is that we have to do well in House races in virtually all of the current. And that's not the answer to it. The answer to it is getting one more than the 25 or 24 seats that need to switch come November.
And hang on to everything you've already got.
In major metropolitan places, Republican is currently seated in that House seat that are vulnerable. And it seems like with each passing day, those seats and others are getting more vulnerable simply because Trump is an asshat. He's incompetent. Did you see Ryan and Pence last night?
Oh.
Or as I like to call them, Eddie Munster and his friend, the hitman from the film The Da Vinci Code.
No, I think, you know, it's interesting. The Eddie Munster is obvious. But I was looking at him last night, and I thought of him as Eddie and Eddie. Eddie Munster.
Like Eddie Haskell?
Eddie Munster and Eddie Haskell.
Well, he seems to be... See, Eddie Haskell was, like, innocent in his threatening nature. He was a good-natured threatener or wise-ass. Pence, on the other hand, I wouldn't trust that bastard as far as I can throw at him.
See, I always figured Eddie had about 5 more years before he put on the clown suit and got the rifle out.
Eddie Haskell?
Yeah.
You know, in real life, the guy that played him was a cop for years in Los Angeles, someplace.
Didn't know that.
Ken somebody. I forget his last name.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, I hate to sound like a dick or anything, but why am I not surprised?
Well, I don't know. I've never met the guy, but I know people who know him, and he's really a salt of the earth good guy. I mean, there are good people who happen to be police people.
Right, not all cops.
Yeah. But anyway, getting back to I take your point as far as what happens if we do everything that we need to do, but because of shenanigans, to put it mildly, you got to outvote the bastards, because doing something the proper way, to my way of thinking, and it goes beyond virtue as its own reward, doing stuff the proper way, and to my mind, is ultimately going to win. It may not win on an every 4-year basis, but it's like cumulative, because I don't know, virtue is its own reward, but what is the opposite of that? Is there a saying having to do with lack of virtue?
No, not that I can think of.
Well, there ought to be.
I'm not disagreeing with you to be disagreeable, but you can at least acknowledge that the deck is stacked and the playing field is tilted almost to vertical. Can you not?
I wouldn't go that far, to be honest, and I'm not arguing just to be argumentative either.
No, this is what conversation radio is.
It's as bad as we allow it to be, in my estimation. If people would take full responsibility to the extent that that applies to the state of their otherwise drab and wretched life, I think you'd see a lot of changes in the world. You know, one of the first acknowledgments that I made in the wake of the 2016 election, so-called, was that I could have done more. There, I can think season and the general where I could have done more to help ensure a Democratic victory. But didn't.
Well, I mean,
because
you're
California.
California was not the problem.
Yeah, I know, but that doesn't mean that I couldn't have done something in the way of support on some level in these other areas like Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin.
Oh, like that, phone banking or something?
Well, yeah, any number of activities, you know, because it all comes down to behaving in a manner consistent with the outcome you wish to see. And if you're not seeing the outcome that you wish to see, your behavior has been somewhat lacking. Now, this doesn't set aside shenanigans, to put it mildly, on the other side. You know, it is what it is, and it ain't what it ain't. You know, to me, there's like a metaphysical aspect to the nature of things. And sometimes, and I know I've been guilty of it many times in life, sometimes, you're like the cork floating on the turbulent body of water when if you look at it another way and realize the power that you do have over a certain number of things, you're not that much of a, and I hate to use this word, but a victim. And that's just the thing. I refuse to be victimized by these bastards. And I think we're going to see this. I mean, if Alabama and Virginia and some other places have been evidence of the mindset and the fire and fury, it's a book title, isn't it? The mindset and the attitude of the opposition, I would not want to be a Republican come November 2018. And a lot of people currently in the House as Republicans have either retired or have said they're not going to be running again. And I think that's indicative of something. And I take it to be a positive sign. So.
Well, I think maybe the problems are, maybe they're not as bad as I say they are, Scott. But I think they're worse than you think they are.
Okay, well, let's meet there and see what can be done. That's all I'm saying.
But you know, when something that the framers saw as being a once in a while kind of anomaly rolls around twice in 16 years, something has gone wrong inside the system. You know, from a systems analysis perspective.
Yeah, and the case in point would be what, 2000 and 2016.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in point of fact, the framers got slapped in the face with it. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 presidential elections in. Remember, Jefferson versus Adams was thrown into the House, only Adams was out of the loop, and it turned into Jefferson versus Gore, or Burr, Jefferson versus Burr. And there were repercussions out of that lasted for a generation because of the spitefulness that it engendered in Jefferson. But you know that. Okay, to give you an idea, this is ripped from the headlines, as the saying goes.
No.
It's a brand new story. This broke today. So back on January 22nd, up in Pennsylvania, Stan, there was a challenge to the gerrymandered congressional map as produced by the GOP, which let the GOP take 13 of 18 congressional districts, even in years when Democrats won the statewide popular vote. In other words, in years when Democrats voted, when more people voted for Democrats for Congress than voted for Republicans, the Republicans still won 13 out of 18 congressional districts. Okay? So,
yeah.
there was a lawsuit. And the people challenging the gerrymander at the state Supreme Court level won. And the court ordered, and this is the language from the opinion, that the district maps must be, quote, composed of compact and contiguous territory and shall not, quote, divide any county, city, incorporated town, borough, township, or ward, except where necessary to ensure equality of population.
Mm-hmm.
Then the court said you've got till February the 9th to redraw the maps, and the governor has till February 15th to approve them, and then it has to be submitted to the court, because the court has jurisdiction, in order for the court to review them. Then, on January 26th, the court spoke again, and said that the legislature had to turn over the data that it had that included geolocation files that, and this is again a quote, that contain the current boundaries of all Pennsylvania municipalities and precincts, and various reports that analyzed how well new maps would comply with the January 22nd order. Well, guess what's happened now? The president pro tem, the president pro tem of the Senate, the Pennsylvania State Senate, a Republican by the name of Joseph Scarnati, and by the way, if you see the doctor when you first begin to scratch, a loading dose of antibiotics will take care of your Scarnati. Sorry, couldn't resist.
That's all right.
Republican Senate President Pro Tem Joseph Scarnati told the straight Supreme Court to go pound sand. That he will not comply with that second order from January 26th, requiring the legislature to turn over its data.
And, what, because of the separation of powers, branches?
No, he claims that it violates the Elections Clause of the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, and applied to the Supreme Court of the United States for a stay, saying that only state legislatures, only the state legislature and not the courts are constitutionally allowed to weigh in on questions of gerrymandering. This is, of course, pure bullshit. The court has jurisdiction. The court has taken jurisdiction. But that's where we are.
I'm not a lawyer, Bob, but it seems to me that there's an equal protection consideration and also civil rights on some level, where if the legislators are deliberately drawing boundaries up to favor themselves, their party, then somebody's getting screwed. And I thought the entire process in this country, or at least the goal, is to have as few people screwed as possible, especially by the people that are in charge.
You sunshiny little optimist, you.
Okay, well, I mean, pardon me as I trip through the field of daisies and sunshine and rainbows, lollipops, unicorns, and stuff. But isn't that the intent of our system?
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, what's kind of bizarre is the position that Scarnati is taking. And of course, my buddy Rick Smith would be a much more eloquent speaker on this because he's up there in PA and probably knows what kind of a political rogue and thug Scarnati is. But this goes all the way. This goes all the way back to the founding principles of the way we run our courts. In Marbury versus Madison, which Justice Marshall authored, he said that there can be no doubt but that the courts have the absolute authority to declare what the law is. I mean, you've just finished your first cup of coffee before first day of 1L starts, and you're marching your shiny little self in to Constitutional Law 1, and the first thing you've read is Marbury versus Madison. It's the thing upon which everything else stands. The court has the right to declare what the law is.
Well, and there have been case after case through history of someone or several someones being as naive as I am, actually looking at it and say, no, this is not naivete. This is the way our system is supposed to work. And a case that comes immediately to mind is the Loving case that was decided in 67. That
Loving
Virginia
versus
couple.
Virginia, yes.
Yeah, in my home state, of all places. Another one that comes to mind is the And the woman just died a few months ago, Edie, who was the spouse of the woman whose case was pivotal in the marriage equality prohibitions being overturned. I mean, that was simply a matter of people saying, I don't care how fucking naive you think we are, there's a principle here, and I want my day in court to argue in favor of that principle. And fortunately, they prevailed. The Lovings prevailed. Because we've already seen, if 2016 taught us anything, it's that people will get outraged over even phony, made-up bullshit stuff. Okay? I mean, if you took away the phony, nonsensical bullshit stuff that Trump says, he would sit there mute. He wouldn't say a goddamn thing, because nothing that comes, no utterance that issues forth from that pile of steaming has any roots in anything other than bullshit and nonsense. So if people can get outraged over nonsense, certainly they can become engaged, not just outraged, but engaged over something that has a basis in reality. You know? And I mean, if that's being naive, then I guess, you know.
Well, I mean, in this case in Pennsylvania, I mean, it's really kind of shocking, because this is conduct that would constitute contempt of court in almost any situation. And this guy just straight up looked at the court and said, piss off.
Yeah.
And the reason he doesn't want to turn over that second that's the data in that second order is because he probably has as an object lesson what happened down in North Carolina, where they walked in and said, "Oh yeah, hell yeah, of course we gerrymandered it to make sure the black people can't have no influence on the election. What do you? We think we stupid?"
Yeah.
And I'll bet you, unless Rick was to tell me otherwise, I'll ask him. But I'll bet you that what's contained in that legislative data is the fact that what they were trying to do is make sure that Democrats could not actually impact elections in practically any district. And that goes back to what I said to you earlier, Scott. What do you do when you get 100%? I mean, because it's possible. I mean, dig it, all right? It is possible in some of these districts that are so badly gerrymandered, it's possible you could have 100% Democratic turnout and not win.
Well, funny we're talking about gerrymandering, and I know you don't have over-the-air TV where you are. Several weeks or months ago on CBS This Morning, or CBS Sunday Morning, I forget the correspondent, but there was somebody who did a piece, and it was a rather well-done piece, on gerrymandering. And they went into some of these very things that we're talking about, and you can find it online, I'm sure. I probably even posted it on my Facebook, but I'll find the link and send it to you. And they talked to people who have ideas, and even in places like California, where such nonsense is prohibited, to the extent that it's possible to draw fair and rational lines for districts, not only House districts in the U.S. House, but also state-level boundaries for elective officials, and even down to the city council and the school districts, they engage in a rational, legal, proper, fair way of doing it. I'll send you that link, and you ought to post it, because maybe in some of these places where there are people who are victimized by this chicanery could benefit from some of that knowledge. Because, like I said, and it bears repeating, in 2016, we saw a bunch of people put on their red hats and get all batshit crazy over stuff that had no basis in reality, okay? There's no reason whatsoever why we can't become engaged, in addition to being outraged, get engaged over things that are based in reality and have a bearing on our future well-being as human beings in America. So...
Wow, this is going to be an ongoing. I mean, this is a potential constitutional crisis inside Pennsylvania, and it goes back to what, you know, way back when the Indian Removal Act was struck down by Justice Marshall. I think it was Justice Marshall in Andrew Jackson's term. That's the second Andrew Jackson reference tonight. Andrew Jackson said, Justice Marshall has issued his order. Now let him enforce it.
Yeah, and whose portrait is hanging over Trump's desk in the Oval Office?
Right. And so, you know, these thugs are daring the Supreme Court to try to exercise its jurisdictional rights, because the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania controls no divisions, as another. As someone else once remarked, they have no way, and that's the problem with everything that we face in this era. What we're finding out, and this was part of a conversation I had earlier off air, we're finding out that the entire American experiment is a faith-based one. Now, I don't mean that this was ours, founded as a Christian nation. Now, none of that crap. But we're finding out that this has all been, and I have long maintained this, a faith-based government from jump. That the Constitution exists, and it only works so long as people believe in it. Now, we've had a couple of times when people didn't, believe in the Constitution, and it did not end well. You know, over 300,000 Americans died because a significant number of people in this country didn't believe in the Constitution and decided to commit treason.
Yeah.
Now, the Constitution prevailed because there were enough people that did believe in the Constitution. But every time there was a lynching throughout this country's history, every time there was a house or a church burned, those are moments when there is a manifestation that people do not believe in the Constitution. And now, with the Trump presidency, we are at as grave a period in American history as we have been since the days leading up to the Civil War. I spent a lot of time, you know, we've got this day in Horn history, and eventually, Brother Deacon Asa will run across the first time I ever used the phrase Cold Civil War, because I used that phrase for a long time before Trump ever came along. In other words, we have all the makings of one, short of the shooting and the killing.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say it's cold. Right now, the status of it is it's sitting in the chafing dish.
It's simmering.
Yeah, and that's just the problem. I mean, I would liken the situation that we're in, being a responsible citizen, is probably not unlike having a house full of two-year-olds in your charge. You've got to be ever vigilant. You can't close your eyes or deflect your attention for a moment, because those bastards will be into something as soon as you turn the other way. And I hate to lower it to the level of two-year-olds, but, you know, and the people who don't like the American system working, like the same people who are real butt buddies, and I don't mean to do a slur, but the people who are intimate in a powerless way with Russia and Putin, some of these same idiots would have been run out on a rail and tarred and feathered and called everything but a child of God within the course of my lifetime. That would have happened. some of the stuff that's being done in the name of global organization and harmony by Trump and his cronies, you know, I mean, it boggles my mind that they're that within my lifetime, we've made a transition to the point where we're currently at. Okay. And it's like, wait a fucking minute here, boys and girls, that there's something wrong with this picture. This is why I do have more than a little hope when it comes to stuff being addressed in coming election cycles, to the extent that that's helpful. But the key to it, friends, is it's a process. From when I started voting the first time in 1972 to this very time, I don't miss an opportunity to vote, because you've got to be part of the process. You've got to stay as involved and active and caring as you possibly can. Otherwise, the two-year-olds will run rampant. And you know how two-year-olds have that little mindset of theirs. I don't want to, and you can't make me. Well, Buster, you better sit in the corner a while and think about that, because the American system is designed to deal with these two-year-old mentalities. So there.
Well, I guess the proof will be in the pudding, Scott. We'll have to just see which way it plays out, and we'll get our answer on November the 6th, 2018, and then again, oh, golly, here, let's just go ahead and check out the date on the calendar and see what we can find out.
I'll tell you one thing, Bob. We better. We are in what you call your perilous times. And I know that, you know, some people say, oh, that's just overreacting and hair on fire. It's never been that. It's not as
November,
bad as it looks.
November 3rd, 2020. November 6th, 2018, and November 3rd, first Tuesday after the first Monday. First Monday will be November the 1st. November the 2nd, first Monday, November 2nd. So the first Tuesday is November the 3rd. November the 3rd, 2020. We'll find out. But I don't think that ordinary turnout, because we've had, I mean, Jesus, what, in the Obama years, you had 60% turnout, something approaching that last year, or in that neighborhood, 60-62%. And the Democrats got more vote for president, and it didn't result in a Democrat being president. That's the Electoral College. But the same thing happened similarly in the House and Senate, and we still couldn't win. The Senate is more voter suppression. It's hard and soft. But the gerrymandering is the House.
Mm-hmm.
And the gerrymandering is real. I mean,
well,
for
I'll
instance,
in
this Pennsylvania case, both orders are in effect, remain in effect, because the Supreme Court hasn't ruled on the stay. Or at least it hasn't as of my reading. I'll try to see if I can keep up with it. But in that scenario that you described, where people turn out to vote and you try to avoid screwing, you try to screw as few people as possible. Well, the situation that we now have, and I mean, you can just do some basic research. There's massive degrees of disenfranchisement that take place sheerly because of the way that lines have been drawn around the places where certain people live and certain people have skin colors or different from the way that the Republicans would like them to vote. And that makes, you know, that makes for a most anti-democratic scenario, to the extent that we're even marginally capable of something that you and I would call democracy. Mm-hmm. And you know where I stand on that. Democracy has always been aspirational in this country and not operational. So, I mean, look, here's another rip from the headline story, Scott. That waxen-looking stand for a weird head of hair, and I mean Trey Gowdy of South Carolina,
mm-hmm.
There I was today minding my own business, and all of a sudden my devices start blowing up with every wire service and whatnot under the sun saying, "Jumping Jesus, Trey Gowdy just quit." And there was this statement about how there's more civility in a death penalty case, and he wants to go back and work in the justice system, and how he's gonna leave the, you know, Trey Gowdy, the guy who led the Benghazi charge against Hillary Clinton, and later quietly admitted that, you know, it was all just an effort to destroy her electoral hopes, her presidential ambitions. Yeah, that guy, all of a sudden, when we're smack dab in the middle of a case of real skullduggery in our government, suddenly he's not interested, the dog, and here's his mom calling, and he's got to do his hair. And so he's going to go back to South Carolina, Stan. Well, I hope you're not going to sit here and tell me that district in South Carolina can as easily be won by a Democrat as it can be a Republican.
I doubt it, but it depends on where it is.
It's the 4th District of South Carolina.
There are Democratic House members from South Carolina.
There is one.
Well, that's one more than zero.
And he is very carefully gerrymandered into that district.
Well, by the way, I sent you that link that I was talking about.
I've got it right here.
Okay.
I'll check it out after the program.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's plenty of work to do is the bottom line. And to the extent that we do that, and see, that's the key. It's not just showing up every 4 years. It's not even just showing up to vote every 2 years or 4 years or 6 years. It's a matter of what you do between the dates when you go to vote. Or in my case, mail back my ballot. We're in the 21st century here in California, Bob. We actually have this thing called vote by mail. Instead of throwing roadblocks in the way of people's participation, they actually make it, if it got any simpler to vote, I'd be ashamed to do it. Okay? I mean, you get your ballot about a month before the election. If you're not up on all the issues and all the candidates, you have plenty of time to figure out who's who and what's what, and then you fill it out. It takes about 20 minutes, unless there are a lot of propositions on the ballot, okay? And I don't even think you need a stamp. I think it's postpaid. I mean, like I say, if it were any simpler to vote in this state, I'd be personally ashamed to do it because I'd figure there's something wrong with it. It's a sin. It must be a sin, you know? But I'm telling you, and if you look, Exhibit A in those places where they just crawl all over themselves to find ways to keep people from voting, those are the places where these reforms and doubled in those areas.
Yeah, so I mean, you're not going to sit here and say that, surely to goodness, Alabama and South Carolina and Mississippi are going to enact vote by mail. Well, that's a threat to our democracy. And what they mean by that is that's a threat to our asses keeping power. We got to hang on to our phony baloney jobs, gentlemen. Harumph.
No, not now. But not now doesn't mean not never. That's what I'm saying. In places where it's possible to do it, go ahead and get it done, and that'll lower the number of places where you still have work to do.
For instance, the South Carolina 4th Congressional District, from Georgia Stan just told me, it's the wealthiest district in the state, and it is by far one of its most conservative.
No doubt.
And so they've gerrymandered the poors right out of it.
Well, what was that state not too long ago where they had some kind of special election? I want to say it was Montana or Idaho. It was up there in that quadrant of the country. And normally they wanted to do voter by mail simply because it would be cheaper to do this special election for whatever it was. And the powers that be poo-pooed it and boo-hooed about doing it. And I can't remember whether it actually was permitted or not. But that's another case of places that stand in the way of... So if there's something that can be to make voting more accessible and attractive, and only somebody who's not interested in you voting would stand in the way of that, unless I'm missing something.
I don't know. I tend to think, and this is not, I'm not being, you know, critical. I think your native optimism gets in the way sometimes of a recognition of just how viciously racist this country still is.
I missed part of that. You this damn Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I know. You drop out some too. But what I said is, I think your native optimism sometimes gets in the way of understanding just how viciously racist this country really is.
Oh, I've no illusions about that. Trust me. I would like to think
way. Here in the Trumpiest state in the union, as silly as it may seem, you could probably get this Republican legislature to go along with the idea of having vote by mail just because they know that they can count on all the white Trumpansies to keep voting like good white maggots Trumpansies.
Well, let's test it. Maybe they'll be unhappily surprised, you know?
I mean, this election coming up is going to be the first one where I'm going to have to show an ID, and I'm pissed.
Yeah.
Sincerely pissed. But, I mean, maybe it's because I had that cup of coffee in law school. The Pennsylvania story is, it's a big, to quote Joe Biden, it's a big damn deal. I mean, when you've got a president pro tem of a state senate calling into question the fundamental nature of the very foundation of American jurisprudence, that matters. That's big. If he gets away with it, every other Republican legislature, and maybe some Democratic ones in this country, will know that they can tell their state Supreme Courts to go pound sand.
Yeah.
Scott, you understand that that does not bode well.
No, of course not. Of course not.
And then some wise ass in the Congress will get the idea that they can tell the United States Supreme Court to do the same damn thing.
Well, I learned my lesson in terms of mindlessly voting for or against local judges. We had a case out here a couple of years ago having to do with two candidates for one of the judicial offices, and one had a goofy name and the other had a less goofy name. And I went ahead and foolishly voted for the person with the less goofy name, and it turned out he was one of these right-wing religious fanatic nut buckets. And that taught me one thing. Don't vote unless you know what the fuck's going on with whatever race or proposition or candidate on the ballot. because that will bite you in the ass. That's just irresponsible behavior. So I don't know how they elect judges in
Some places don't.
Sometimes there's an appointment.
There's a school of thought that says an elected judiciary is a terrible idea. I'm not sure that I'm entirely on board with that. The argument goes that it invites political hackery into what should be an impartial judicial system. But the other side of that coin is that you get the same political hacks if you let the political hacks in your governor's office or your legislature do the choosing for you.
So it's
not a coin toss. I mean it is a coin toss. It's not clear in one direction or the other. But I think we have some sort, well, or at least we used to, notion that a judiciary is a good thing. That you've got to have those checks and balances, and you can't have those checks and balances unless you've kind of got an uneven number, and with the government sort of, from a civic standpoint, engaged in an ongoing game of rock, paper, scissors, which is basically what the separation of powers is.
Well, and see, that's it. We didn't even get into this, but while Trump is tweeting and conjuring up all sorts of diversions and drama and outrage, between he and the Senate, I guess, for okaying these nominees, he's filled more judicial seats in his first year, I believe, than anybody, which is scary. When you're talking about the federal judiciary, because they're in office for life.
Yeah, and that seems always to happen of late, you know, going all the way back to Reagan. That happens whenever Republicans are in Congress.
Yeah.
They pack the bench, not just the Supreme Court, but, you know, on down, courts that really matter. Mm-hmm. And then when a Democrat gets into the White House, there's always some reason to slow walk the nominations.
Yeah.
Because once again, the Republicans understand the nature of the game and are willing to do anything to win it, while our side sits around picking the navel out of the lint out of our goddamn navels and talking about, dude, the lesser of two evils is still too evil. I've got to be able to vote my conscience, dude. Not understanding that this is, you know, that this is not a polite Sunday school debate, but that it is in fact an existential fucking struggle.
Well, that's what I was getting at before, Bob, is the fact that it's a process. It's from the moment you begin voting, it's like a lifelong commitment. Well, it's not like a lifelong commitment. It is a lifelong commitment. That's part of the deal. That's part of your admission ticket into the system and into the society. You've got to be present and voting every time there's an opportunity to be. And that's on all levels of government. And if it looks overwhelming, it's only because not enough people are taking it seriously enough in enough opportunities. Because to the extent that people are involved and active and concerned and informed and are rational, stuff can get done. Well, listen, I'm going to go because I hadn't intended to talk this long. But I'm glad we covered some of this stuff because it's important stuff.
Well, it is, and it's only going to continue to get more so.
Yeah, I know. So keep up the good work. You provide a service that's without equal on the airwaves, or at least not airwaves, but communication.
On the packet passages in the series.
Yeah.
in the series of tubes, because it's not a big truck. Is that what you're saying?
Well, whatever it is. I mean, we would be sorely lacking the discourse and the content that's otherwise available would be sorely lacking. And it's not just you, Bob. Hats off to you, but you got some of the brightest people in your audience that I've ever encountered. And generally, if there's something that we two of us are stumped about, somebody will chime in almost immediately to fill in the blank. And that's good. That's a good, this is a good resource to have.
Well, I appreciate it, Scott. That's mighty kind of you to say, and I mean that sincerely. So enjoy your evening. Have a nice relaxing cup of freeze-dried coffee. And you know, maybe soon I'll start pestering you about viewing your second viewing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I looked on my list of things to watch, and I saw it there the other night. And perhaps this weekend will be a perfect time to do that.
Well, once the first quarter's coming to an end and the Eagles are down like 72 points, firing up the Big Lebowski is probably not a terrible idea.
Yeah, probably not. All right. Thank you again, Bob, for the opportunity and for all that you do. And we'll chat again at some point.
All right. You take care, Scott, and give our best to Punky.
He's right there. I'm waving to him, and Chirps is zonked out on the sofa.
All right. See you, Scott.
All right, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our buddy Scott and Punky. Of course, Punky's a ventriloquist. He's doing it all. That's a punchline. By the way, I brought up Vote Your Conscience, and Earther said, "Vote your conscience, dude. Yeah, don't vote your conscience. Don't vote your conscience, Tree Beard. Just vote. It's a civic chore. Do you sweep your conscience? Do you launder your conscience?" and this goes with something Earther said earlier. Earther writes Tree Beard and Celery entirely too well. Yeah, because voting is like evil, and it like perpetuates the idea that electoral politics work. If it did, they would make voting illegal. Yeah, dummies, there are all sorts of election fraud schemes, Treebeard. Yeah. Oh, hey, there's been no fundraising for the last couple of days, and I've been thrilled about it. But I still send out thank yous when things happen. So big thanks go out this evening to Renee in D.C., thank you, Renee, for your help this evening. Thank you so very kindly. All of these Republicans who suddenly hear their mothers calling them and have to quit being Republicans in Congress, maybe it's just paranoid or, you know, maybe I'm an establishment shill, dude. But does it run across your mind, too, that maybe given the fact that the House Intel Committee is leaking like a sieve, that maybe, just maybe, some of these people might actually have figured out that they've got a shit ton of rubles in their campaign war chests and that maybe they, you know, because you know special prosecutor doesn't have to publicly file his target letters, but especially in light of the fact that the Russians funneled a shit ton of rubles into the American election through America's wealthiest and most powerful domestic terror organization, the NRA, and given the fact that the NRA pumps shit tons of money into Republican campaign coffers, you think maybe some of those money in those coffers have pictures of Big Bad Vladdy Daddy in the middle instead of, like, maybe Benjamin Franklin? And that maybe they're, a little nervous about that fact. It seems more than a little possible to me. Let's run out to somewhere in the general L.A. area and check in. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Oh, my God, it's Tracy. My night just became wonderful.
Happy birthday, honey.
Well, thank you, Tracy. Thank you so kindly.
How's it going today? I've been listening to all the different things about, you know, the state of our union. Well, I didn't watch it. I could not bring myself.
That's okay. I did it for you.
I couldn't do it. I'm like, there's only so much I can stomach, and there's just, you know,
you've got to know, Tracy. You've got to know what it did to me to hear that orange monstrosity look to the assembled and say, "Beautiful clean coal."
He said, "Beautiful clean coal."
Oh yeah. And it's moments like that that you feel like Sisyphus. You know, you're pushing that rock up that mountain, pushing that rock
up that hill, pushing it.
And then in 2018, this goddamned idiot says, "Beautiful clean coal." And the rock just goes, you're like, "Fuck!" And you trudge back down. Gotta push the fucking rock. Gotta push the fucking rock. And you start shoving it back up the hill again. I mean, I couldn't. I just, I mean, we're supposed to. See?
See, I didn't got you worked up. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Well, no, it wasn't you. It was that.
Well, see, I reminded you of it because we are in, and God bless Scott. You know, I love listening to him because he's such an optimist. I wish I could be as optimistic as he is. But like you said, we're in a fight for our fucking lives right now. And it's a battle royale because these people are not willingly going to give up their power. You just told us the story about what's happening in Pennsylvania. I mean, this ban is basically, they told them, you have to, you know, redistrict these people, and people should, so people could be, have, you know, representative of who, of their voting rights. And this man is like saying, "Fuck you. I don't have to listen to you." And this is indicative of what this country is, it was happening in this country right now. We're getting a lot of "fuck yous." So I don't have to do what I'm going to do what I want to fucking do right now. And it's terrifying.
And yes, I live in California.
Yeah.
And I was going to bring this up because, you know, coal doesn't have much of an impact on you or anybody else in California. But you know what does? Clean energy, renewable energy,
sustainable energy.
Well, guess what the Trump regime did today, Tracy?
Last time I did hear something the other day about them trying to raise higher tariffs.
Yeah, yeah, they put tariffs on solar panels coming from China. So that was step one. Step two was today. Today,
what do they do now?
When they release their budget request next month, next month starts tomorrow. When they do that, Tracy, we now know that the Trump regime will seek a 72% cut in clean energy funding at the Department of Energy. And among other things, they want to pump some of the money. It's thought that they'll want to pump some of the money into nuclear.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
See, this is these people, and to call them people or humans is an overstatement, I think, because I don't even think they are human. I think there's some kind of humanoid, alien. I don't even know.
Pod
subhuman,
people.
Pod people. I don't know what they are, because when you don't, you know you're wrong. You know what you're doing is wrong, but you don't care. I think that's a sociopath, right?
You pretty much.
Because as long as they are in power, they don't care, because it's all about the money.
Well, and it's all about the money and the power. They have power, and they will do anything to maintain their access to that power. We, on the other hand, over on this side, we talk about things like, I've got to vote my conscience, dude.
I got to vote my fucking conscience. I got into, over Christmas, I went over to a friend's house and for the holiday, and I actually got into a heated discussion. There were no Trump supporters there, of course, but there was this young man, a millennial, who, you know, of course, didn't vote. And, you know, he was a Bernie supporter and everything, but, you know, all this stuff about why he didn't vote for Hillary and all that. And I'm just thinking, and I told him, I said, I understand why you wouldn't vote for Hillary. I held my nose. I did not want to vote for Hillary. I voted for Bernie in the primaries, and I would have gladly have voted for Bernie in the general election. But there's only two choices. We could either vote for Trump or Hillary. Now, as much
that's that corrupt binary duopoly, you know?
Right. But, you know, if Hillary was president, we wouldn't be talking about a 72% slashing of the clean energy. We wouldn't be talking about...
Yeah, but, like, what about the super predators?
Right. What about, you know, Goldman Sachs? And what about... Look, I'm still pissed that she talked, you know,
it was aggravating as shit, Tracy. It was. But there's a difference between being aggravated and having your fucking life threatened.
Thank you.
You know, I wonder if the little dude, you know, with his conscience you're talking about, I wonder if his conscience is going to get deported with the father of two who got chucked out of the United States from Detroit a couple of weeks back. Did all these Stein voters' consciences go with him?
Exactly. You know,
are these little pricks? Sorry, gender based. Bad. Are all these little assholes' consciences gonna make sure that his kids are okay without a daddy? Because I just want to know that.
Exactly.
Sorry, I don't mean to get you worked up.
No, I mean, I see these people complaining, like when I go into the grocery store and people complaining about there's no produce and all this. I'm like, well, hello, would you want to come out here and go and worry about picking, you know, produce and stuff like that if you were worried about being deported? There's a consequence to all the stuff that's happening. Your prices are going to go up. Everything is happening. And it's like,
since you didn't listen last night, you know, it was just this tissue paper thin lies of this tissue paper thin pastiche of lies and half truths and outright bullshit. And of course, they take the language out back behind the barn and just bludgeon it with an axe handle. So there, you realize that this phrase we keep hearing, chain migration, we got to end chain migration. You realize that's a manufactured bullshit right-wing racist term, right?
Right, of course it is.
There's no statute that says chain migration. There's no administrative rule about chain migration. It's like partial birth abortion. It's an invented term. But the thing about chain migration is, what they call that is actually a humane attempt to keep families together. So let's say daddy gets out of a war-ravaged region where there are drug cartels running around chopping off people's heads. And, well, he'd like to bring mama over because mama's at risk from the drug cartels running around chopping off people's heads. So mama comes over and they got baby girl and baby boy, whatever. And they think, you know, I hate leaving my mama back there. And she says, you know, I hate leaving my mama. So they try to bring, and it's okay as long as all those people are fucking white.
Right, from Norway.
Right, because they have skills because they were born Norwegian. But if they're from a shithole country, well, it's a different story. There's only one problem. Guess who chain migrated?
Everybody.
Well, let's say you're a lovely young Slovenian girl.
Exactly.
And let's say you've made a reputation for yourself by taking your clothes off in exchange for money for various and sundry men's magazines in Europe, and you've developed a talent for taking off your clothes for money to be photographed for magazines. Well, you want to take that talent, you know, the talent being taking your clothes off, you want to take that to the big time, in other words, Merca. So you get over to America on a, like, student tourist visa or whatever, and start taking your clothes off for all you're worth. And you kind of stay by hook or by crook. But then you get... you saw what I did there. Ooh, I'm giving us both a cowbell. And so then, you know, you marry this guy, and you say, I would very much like to bring over my sainted mother and father. And you do. Well, that's chain migration, and that's melanoma fucking Trump.
Oh, yes.
Or then there's the chain migration that Mary McLeod or whatever her fucking name was. You wanna I found this out last night. I'm not kidding. This is not a joke. You want a goddess of irony moment? I mean, this is one of those things where you raise up a tabernacle or a cathedral or something. This is so ironic. Trump's mammy came here with no skills whatsoever and barely a dime in her pocket. And, of course, she went on to marry the son of a pimp, Fred Trump. I mean, people are just who people are. It's like, I'm the grandson of a Klansman. It just is.
It's just what it is.
And so she came over here, dirt poor, no skills. She worked as a menial drudge until she could marry the son of a pimp. But here's where we need to start building the cathedral of irony. Tracy, I kid you not. Mary McLeod, or whatever her fucking name was, arrived from Scotland in the United States aboard, wait for it, the RMS Transylvania.
No.
And now her boy is Renfield to a dude named Vlad. I mean, the goddess of irony is doing everything in her power to call us to our senses. Today, the Republicans left Washington, D.C. to go to a retreat here in West Virginia at the Greenbrier Hotel, and the Republican congressional learning, working, whatever, clavern group on their train had a train wreck when they hit a trash truck.
Did the truck survive?
Sadly, one died, and I think it was the driver of the truck. But the Republican majority is a train wreck.
It's a train wreck. But people keep...
Near Charlottesville.
But it's a rigged game.
Sure it is.
Because they keep winning. No matter how many, you know, we can pray and hope that come November of this year that, you know, we take back the House and all this. But let's face it, Bob, the chances of that happening are what?
Slim.
Or, you know,
slim.
And they're
only slim because it requires Herculean effort and everybody turning out, okay? Mary Harris Jones, known to the world, known to history as Mother Jones, once said, pray for the dead, but fight like hell for the living. We need a lot less praying and a lot more fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Pray at your leisure. Fight like your life depends on it.
Because and our lives do depend on it.
Because it does. Yeah. Tracy, we're almost out of time, but are you doing okay?
I'm doing good.
You know what?
You know,
sound really good.
I do. I feel good. I just hanging in there, doing some meditating and just trying to keep my head above water and making sure that I, you know, not doing things like watching the State of the Union. And whenever I hear his voice, I turn the television off or put it on mute or change the channel or whatever, because it's not good for you.
Right. But that doesn't mean you stop thinking about it.
No, I don't stop thinking about it because I do everything within my power to, you know, what I could do on my end to, you know, fight the powers that be. But, you know, I just, if, you know, it's scary. I try not to panic. That's what I try not to do. I try to say, you know, this too shall pass. But I still think that, you know, people don't get out and vote, but we still have, you know, the voter suppression, gerrymandering and stuff like that. And what I don't understand is what are the Democrats doing about this stuff? And what you just said about having to show the first time, how many years have you voted? And you're going to have to show your fucking ID to vote?
Yep. I'm tempted to show up in blackface or something just for the fuck of it. Would you forgive me if I did?
I would forgive you.
Kind of like the shoe polish scene with Gene Wilder from Silver Streak.
Silver Streak, yes. I'm bad. I'm...
Sorry.
Only that, yes. But... I would forgive you for that.
It would certainly cause a stir. Yeah.
Well, on that note, I know we had to go, but again, happy birthday, Bob. Enjoy the rest of your
evening. Thank you so much. And my best to everybody out there, and stay safe on the 6 7/8.
And 6 7/8 and 5 1/2.
And the 9 3/16, right, yeah. Tracy,
exactly.
Take care, dear. Bye
you
now.
You too, baby. Bye-bye.
The one and only Tracy, the lady cab driver calling from Southern California. Before I get out of here, a quick note from Earther, and all kidding aside, here's that chain migration that all the little white wingers and nectarine Nero are pissing and moaning about. This is a real live example of it. Earther sends me an email, chain gang migration. It takes a few years for them to be able to come. If I'm a citizen and I have my uncle immigrate, it could easily take 5 years. He could have his adult children immigrate 5 years after that. So 10 years after I have my uncle immigrate, his children could immigrate. He'd be eligible for citizenship at that point, and the children would be eligible 15 years after the whole process started. Does that sort of bring into perspective the essentially racist nature of the objection of these little fucking crypto Klansmen and crypto fascists and not so crypto Nazis? Yeah. So thanks everybody for joining in the conversation. I do appreciate it. Thanks, and thanks to you for sharing your precious finite time, engaging in the program in whatever way you so choose. Thank you so very much to everybody who supports the program. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Pinch Hit Utility Midweek chat room moderator Steve, and all-around great guy Steve from Georgistan. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa for HeadOn.live and the new toll-free number. Thank you very kindly to Thank you very kindly to John Fox in Australia, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.